This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the most spectacular crap show in town. I'm Douchebag McGee, and I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Senor Timoteo. It's the Formation Lab. Timothy, Tim, Tomothy, how are you doing?
I respond to all of those things. I'm doing
even
great,
Tomothy?
Sir.
You respond to Tomothy?
Honestly, if someone's saying it in my direction, I'll probably respond. You call me Larry for all I care, and I'll probably look around and be like, are you calling for someone? Can I help you? I am well, sir. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. You know, new year, new us, new Daytona 24. I'm not going to lie. I spent a good chunk of the last weekend covering the world's largest ice fishing competition. And while my phone was alive in the 1 degree high of the frozen Gull Lake, I was listening to the 24 of Daytona, exhausting myself through every single possible outlet. But it was a good time. It was a good time. You know, I'm doing good, Tim. I know for me, I think this last weekend is my second favorite weekend of the year in terms of like racing. I love the 24 of Daytona. It can't beat the Indy 500 weekend with Monaco and also the Coke. Like you can't.
As far as race weekends go, no, but this one does hold a special place in the motorsport enthusiast's heart. As the first time we start to thaw things out, start to light the fires, kick the tires a little bit, start to see what everybody's got this year, what kind of form we're on, because there are F1 guys in there, there are IndyCar guys in there, there are NASCAR guys in there. Who's kept up this winter time? Who's going to come out and do something cool in their respective stuff, and the new cars that are out there and the new tech that's out there? Because damn, there's some we got some good times ahead in endurance racing.
We really do. I think we're about to enter maybe not a golden age, but like a bronze or silver age after some meh years in IMSA. Not knocking IMSA, but you know, I think we're really entering into what is going to be another special period for IMSA, but also for the WEC, with IMSA and them kind of having, you know, an increased workability together. Manufacturers are entering it. We have the highest car count in, I mean, years at the 24 Hours of Daytona with 61 cars. Tim, I know we in the past have said that, you know, this is, we like this better than we like Le Mans. I personally will stand by that. I respect the history of Le Mans as much as humanly possible. And I understand that Le Mans is Le Mans and Daytona will never be Le Mans. I like the racing of Daytona better. call me crazy.
No, I'm not going to call you crazy. I think that my fandom and my preference for the 24 Hours of Daytona probably stems from the fact that I'm deeply proud just as an American of the fact that we can host a global sporting event that is well-respected in all corners. And that I can look forward to every single year as the kickoff. So I think that's why I'm preferential to it, because, you know, I mean, as I get a sense of national pride that, you know, we see not only the Porsches, the Audis, the, you know, the Ferraris of Europe coming to compete in the endurance championships, but we also see Cadillac doing quite well. And, you know, American teams that are out there really throwing elbows with everybody else, the Andretti's, the Penske's, the Wayne Taylor Racings of the world. So I get an intense national pride. I can see it and think, okay, these guys are also speaking my native language, not just my nerd language. So that's why I prefer it. That said, yeah, Le Mans, it can't be beaten. It is Le Mans. The Mulsanne Strait is hallowed in the annals of history as one of the most consequential straits in all of sport.
Speaking of which, by the way, the NASCAR Garage 56 program is coming up here.
I have an interesting way to pitch that.
All right. We'll get to that later.
I have a news headline for you, Luke.
All right. You got the news headline.
I got the news headline that the ladies and gentlemen will be dying to hear if they haven't paid attention at all in the last 72 hours.
Here comes the news.
Jenson Button is going to be driving a NASCAR.
Yes, that's true.
In Europe at a 24-hour race. Bet you didn't see that coming. It's just an interesting sequence of wait, what?
Huh? He's driving NASCAR? What? Of all the drivers for DB Jensen Button in a NASCAR at Le Mans, it's just a weird.
It's a weird combination.
I am more excited for that than I am 90% of the cars in Le Mans.
First and foremost, those prototype cars are crazy.
They are. I'm not actually trying to knock cars there. Let me rephrase that. That might be one of the top three storylines of Le Mans for me. I'm just so intrigued about how that NASCAR, I'm not going to pretend like it's going to actually compete with an actual prototype that's built for this endurance race. But
aren't they going
to
throw it in the GTD program?
I think they are. Let me take a look here.
I'm pretty sure they race in the GTD class. And honestly, it is going to be the next gen NASCAR that they are rolling out at the 24 Hours of Le Mans in this, let's call it stunt, that I think is just phenomenal. If you can choose, honestly, it looks, I was talking with my friend Andy recently about it, over the weekend. And he said it just looks like a touring car now. And he's not wrong.
No, it really does.
It really does look like a touring car. But I'm excited because NASCAR finally is kind of starting to do some different thinking. And I'm excited to see what this evolved thinking includes with their on-track product.
Yeah, I am excited. NASCAR really is. They're finding a way to win. I didn't intend for this to be a Yugo NASCAR kind of thing, but I do think they're starting to find ways to win in the modern age as a racing series. All right. I don't know how the street race in Chicago is going down. And I know a lot of NASCAR fans are like, why do we have so many street races, so many road course races? But the fact that you're willing to do a one-off street race, maybe a one-off, maybe continuing, right? But the fact that you're willing to do a downtown street race in a city that has traditionally been more underserved, especially in recent years with the closing of Chicagoland Speedway, which, by the way, is in Joliet, which is like an hour and a half south. Like, it's not really in Chicago at all. The fact that you're willing to do that is a win. That's a marketing win. All right. The fact that the clash, you moved it from Daytona. I know that's like, we moved it from Daytona, but the fact that you're putting that in the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum in front of what, like 90,000 people, it's not in downtown Los Angeles, but you're in the urban core. That is a win. That is something that gets on Twitter and TikTok and finds its way around social media. I have friends that have talked about those events that could not tell you where NASCAR is racing 40 weeks out of the year. 40 out of 43 events, you know.
Say, yeah, they if they know where they're racing at all, they just honestly, the general fan of sport at this point looks up, sees NASCAR on, and looks away. And I think that they are finally catching up with the power of a good social media marketing team, because the other disciplines have had it forever.
And just events in the modern age, right? Because that's something that, I mean, even when I was working at Worldwide Technology Raceway, it's something you see with IndyCar at the National GP. Say what you will about the track, but they realize that a successful event needs to not just be show up to the game, watch the game, leave. That might be how you do it in the MLB, but when it's a rare event like this, you need to turn it into something that does go viral, something that does promote tourism, something that does increase that demand. It's something that Formula One is honestly really good at, right? And because you say, oh, the Nashville track sucks. Yeah, but does the Nashville GP experience suck? Because I haven't heard, outside of the rain race, I haven't heard that. It's like, oh, it's great barbecue. There's great music being played. It's like a big block party. It's accessible from downtown. It's accessible from tourists, from locals. I'm like, where NASCAR's. Yeah,
that's right.
In a way that with all due respect towards Pocono and Martinsville.
Do we have to really respect Pocono that much?
I like Pocono. All right. But that's the IndyCar talking to me. Do have other IndyCar news. And Martinsville, which Martinsville is great. Martinsville doesn't drive tourism in the same way that that does. Martinsville doesn't create the hype, the demand in the same way that something like a Chicago does, or something, especially, again, I'll go back to the Clash, putting the Clash in front of people in a destination and making a proper show out of it. I do think that's a victory. And I think going back to the 24 hours of Daytona, that's something that the 24, you know, maybe it's not to the level of actually massive races in terms of like worldwide notoriety, right? But that's something that the 24 does, because boy howdy does it really feel when you're there, like, you know, this is the beating heart of racing. Having been there in 2018, trying to get there next year, we'll get to that. Tim, if we're going next year, you're going. I'll fly to St. Louis, tie you up, put you in a suitcase, check the baggage. I'll spare no expense.
The industry that I'm in right now, that will not be hard to get away in January, my guy.
That's fair. I think that is something that I think is on the precipice. I do think that
NASCAR could make some moves, and yeah, IMSA is also making moves.
Which is, I should mention too, NASCAR owns IMSA. If you're one of those people who didn't know the inner workings, NASCAR also owns IMSA. When NASCAR figures out something works, IMSA will also figure that out.
It's no coincidence that this is happening at Le Mans.
Yes.
You know, and is it a stunt to race Jimmy Johnson, Jensen Button, and I can't remember who the other driver is for their team, but no, it's not, because they want that international crowd, specifically the European F1 drivers that are fans that Jensen brings, because he is a fan favorite from now until the end of time because of 2009, and just what a charming, nice guy he is.
Mike Rockenfeller, by the way, Mike Rockenfeller, who's a DTM driver.
There you go.
And also races, the WEC. So you're going to have a sports car driver, an F1 driver, and a NASCAR driver drive.
There's some serious discipline behind that wheel.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun. The WEC, the FIA WEC, sent out, put a post out, like announcing it today. And they put up a picture of Jensen Button looking startlingly like a mix between Steve McQueen and Paul Newman. And saying, Daytona fans, and he had the glasses, he had the leather jacket, he looked like right in between those two. And I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing. They're pandering to me, the American motorsport fan. Nicely done.
So you're Steve McQueen and Paul Newman. So you're telling me that I haven't seen this photograph, but you're telling me that I am going to feel strange questions that I have never, I've rarely felt in my life before upon seeing this.
That is extremely true.
I'm going to question things about my identity and what I find attractive.
It's good that you question these things from time to time, Luke, just as a matter of practice. And
I mean, look, when you're throwing out names like Steve McQueen and Paul Newman, I mean, let me throw this out there. Is there any man that does not question such things when they know, when they see Steve McQueen and or Paul Newman?
If you don't, you're just lying. Lying.
That's,
you know, it's like lying. We all find Ryan Reynolds attractive. Sorry. We all find Paul Newman and Steve McQueen irresistibly attractive.
They're men's men.
The link to the picture is now sitting on your phone. So we will let the ladies and gentlemen listen in real time while Luke reacts to this picture that the WEC has put out.
Oh, boy. All right. It's loading. I got Instagram's got to pull up. Oh, Lord. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to save this one for a little later. And
but you see what I mean?
I do.
Look, that picture is intentional. That's a social media team that knows what they're doing.
Speaking of attractive men, let's talk about Elio Castroneves and Simon Pagenaud.
Yes, Simon Pagenaud, who put in a Herculean overnight effort.
Yeah, he did.
Car got faster every single lap. It was amazing.
You know, and I think too that one of the underrated parts of any endurance race, but Daytona being the most night of the endurance race of the 24s, it certainly shines a bit more. Is overnight is a hard time to put in Herculean efforts sometimes, because it overnight is many times a war of attrition. It's don't gain too much, you know, don't lose too much. If you gain, that's great, but just don't lose it between midnight and like 4 a.m.
You can't win the 24 hours of Daytona in the nighttime, but you can definitely lose it.
Right. So like for a lot of times, like, and I know this isn't literally how it is, but realistically, it's like, just stay on the lead lap overnight. And when we wake up, we'll be good.
Most everyone out there,
co-drivers wake up, you'll be good.
Most everyone out there, most every team is trying to maximize speed and lower their fuel output.
Right.
So they are going a little bit faster. So, and they are trying to conserve their fuel, and or they're trying to conserve fuel as much as possible for the final stint, you know, in 12 hours time.
So it's one of the harder times to really put in a massive banger of a lap. And not only that, but just human body wise, and anybody who works the night shift can tell you, it is not easy to perform maximum peak when you're on an overnight shift. No matter how much sleep you have to prepare for it, 3 a.m., you're going to feel a little groggy in a way that you don't at 3 p.m. Or 3 a.m., you're going to feel that grogginess that you don't at 3 p.m.
Yeah,
so for
that's
him,
true.
For him to go overnight like that was nothing short of incredible. Elio Castroneves, by the way, this is all on the Meyer Shank Racing team, which does dethrone Wayne Taylor Racing from doing
how many
back to back wins? Yeah, back to
no,
back.
No, I
wins.
Think that would have been a hat trick, because they won with the Cadillac and then they won with the Acura.
Yeah, I'm looking over here. It would have been four in a row. They won 2019 with the Cadillac. They won 2020 with the Cadillac, and then 2021 with the Acura.
Yeah, so I remember they did that switch, and that, I guess that was the hat trick. But yeah, right. That would have been a good string.
But good for Meyer Shank and Mike Shank. And Elio Castroneves gets out there. Elio Castroneves, fun fact, is now one of the top 11. He's one of only 11 drivers to have won three in a row. And am I crazy, or is Elio Castroneves probably lined up in a way that that the many other don't have to? Am I crazy? Because the record is five. I think he can get five.
His renaissance, though. Yeah. He's got the Indy 500 win. He's got a few more championship points. He won. Correct me if I'm wrong. I could be. What was one of the last races he won last year?
Let's take a look here. But
Elio
shows up to big races. That's the key, man. You know, like it's
he
wild.
Shows up on Sunday.
Yeah, you're thinking of he finished eighth at Mid Ohio as well. But other than that, he kind of tailed off the end of the season. But won the Indy 500, seventh at the Indy 500 last year, seventh. And I should mention too, did not look too shabby. Seventh is a respectable position in the Indy 500. That is not an easy get. All right, but yes. He shows up to big events. I do think that if I'm Mike Shank, I know WTR has used him in the past as well. If I'm Mike Shank, if I'm Wayne Taylor, if I'm the Cadillac Chip Ganassi Cadillac CGR. I'm looking for an extra driver because it's the 24 and you get to add in a third or a fourth. I mean, Elio has won it.
Elio would be a tough one to pass up. That right. is for sure. But the drive of the year for the 24 hours of Daytona for me has to go to someone else.
Oh boy. Who is it? Are you thinking the same guy I'm thinking here?
I am thinking Jordan Taylor.
You're thinking Jordan Taylor. Okay. Yep.
Jordan Taylor put in the greatest in like cockpit video I've ever seen. Our super producer Dylan sent it to me and I haven't stopped laughing since. he is going, nearly 200 miles an hour perfect line through the NASCAR 1-2 as he's going into the international chicane, one-handed, drumming a beat on his cockpit. Like it's just another Sunday drive. And you know what? To be that cool, calm, and collected that you're beaten to, even if it's me, I'm probably beaten to the Foo Fighters at that point, you know, and I'm doing the air drums and everything. That's the most relatable thing I saw. Therefore, he gets my drive of the year.
He gets your drive of the year. My drive of the year is going to go to James Allen. The clip that just circulates and circulates because it's a testament to what we love about not just Daytona, but endurance racing. A man who, after 24 hours, started the last lap, you know, I think it was 3 seconds behind. 3 seconds behind his LMP2 counterpart in CrowdStrike Racing APR, and managed to chase him down on the last lap for what was, I mean, just a fraction of a second, a photo finish, so close that Lee Diffie almost missed the call because, like, we'll see, because yep. He had to go wait for the timing to update. That was such a tremendous comeback. It's what I love about endurance racing, right?
You know what I love it's most 24 about endurance hours racing right there? Now,
go on.
Is that both of our votes are right.
they're totally right.
They're both right. And you can, the best thing is everybody wins with endurance racing. There are many storylines that you can follow through the entire night. You can follow Pagenaud and Elio Castroneves on their hunt for his on their hunt for history to stop the historic streak and to get Elio another win. You can follow the GTD classes where, you know, the Porsches were having a hard time and, you know, facing all that adversity. You can follow Wayne Taylor Racing and Jordan Taylor phoning it in with a one-handed, you know, through the 1-2, which just sounds awesome. Or you can join the LMP2 where it came down after 24 hours to a photo finish.
After all of this chaos, it never does. And at the end of the day, I'm going to throw this out there. Even if, let's suppose it's the most boring Russian GP-esque race you've ever imagined for the 24 hours of Daytona, it's still the coolest collection of cars at night that you will ever see in your goddamn life.
So I was really looking forward to more.
There's nothing sexier.
No, I was looking forward to seeing more prototype cars. But I think that once you see the Valkyrie, that Peugeot, the Porsche, and whatever Audi comes back with. I think you're going to see just the most alien looking cool tech on that track you have ever seen. Le Mans and the 24 hours next year at Daytona are going to be lit, as the kids say.
Oh my gosh, they absolutely are. And that's not to mention, by the way, just the GTD classes, GTD Pro and GTD, offering the best bang for your buck in sheer car variety and like schemes. Those Lexuses in the black and neon yellow under the night at Daytona, maybe with little neon strips on them, fireworks and or Ferris wheel in the background. That is car porn, baby.
That is fantastic. Car porn. That is for sure. It is fantastic.
Speaking of all the things that we love about Daytona, LMP3 also raced.
Who cares? whoever is fielding Santino Ferrucci in IndyCar, or whoever is on the Williams team in F1, or whoever the most irrelevant people are in NASCAR, I just don't care.
I would have cared, but this was one of the most thorough shellackings I've ever seen, and in a race where every other position, thanks to some cautions, had, you know, guys within a few seconds of each other down to the wire. LMP3, AWA wins with Wayne Boyd behind the wheel at 46 laps behind the leader. And then, hold on, let's bust out our pocket calculators, because the second place LMP3 car finished behind another 13 GTD cars, which is, come on, really? And finished 58 laps behind the leaders. So let's see, that's 12 additional laps behind.
That,
There's not much you could do. No, there's not much you could do with that gap. I'm sorry, guys. No. That's that's
after,
a bad
show. That many safety cars. If there hadn't been that many late safety cars,
it would have been like 20. It would have been like
20. Oh no, it'd have been like 30 or 40. It would have been so bad. But yeah, and honestly, it's just too boring to care about. Honestly, the LMP3 is either for up and coming rookies that are at their last gasp of their career, or gentleman drivers.
Yeah. And here's the thing is I don't mind gentleman drivers or rookies, when they're providing good racing, but I think for me, at the end of the day, it just came down to like, it wasn't good racing.
At least they didn't cause, I was gonna say they were roadblocks, but at least they didn't, make any like massive, someone got hurt pileups. So
yeah.
Last half
point. How about this, by the way? I believe at the end of that race, there were 43 or 44 cars still running somewhere around there,
which was good.
It's absolutely nuts. Yeah, let's see. So there was 45 cars by my count still running at the end of the race, which you don't have to go too far back to find in the 24. That was the car count.
Yeah,
like to start the race, you know.
Everyone should think, okay, Tim, you know, 30% failure rate. First of all, guys, endurance racing is tough just to finish. That's the whole point. But secondly, yeah, there was a time when a 30% attrition rate would have meant like 20 cars finishing.
Yeah.
So I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah, and
it's a lot more Rolex Daytonas that Rolex has to show up with.
Yeah, for real. Right. Yep. I love that event. I can't wait to go to it again. Let's take a look. What we say finished 45 finished, I think was my estimate. The one I went to had 50 cars. So 50 cars to start with in 2018. And in 2017, there were 55, which isn't bad. But yeah, I went to one with 50 cars. And I'll be honest, that one felt that one felt like a decent amount of car count. I wasn't like, oh my gosh. Oh yeah, here we go. 2019. We go back. But that's 4 years now. Oh my God.
4 years ago.
45 cars qualified.
What episode is this? What episode number is this?
Are you making me pull up Anchor right now? Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was gonna say,
we've been doing this since 2018. Is this our 5 year anniversary?
Episode 145, 50, 55, 60. I'm counting wrong. 145, 6, 7, 8, 9, 150. This is episode 150 right now. Look at us.
Wow.
Hey.
Look at that. Surprise. Episode 150. Hey, buddy.
Episode 150.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Oh, thanks. I didn't get you anything, but I gave you the gift of me.
I was just saying, we're just hanging out like we always do. But happy anniversary, bud.
Happy anniversary. But so, Tim, would you like to bust out the first race rating of the season? Grading?
I think just an obligatory way, I have to give it an A+. I don't care. I just don't care even if the racing product wasn't that great, I'm going to give it an A+.
We're back to racing. We're back to racing. How can you not be happy?
Like, yeah, I'm happy. And, as Dylan says, it's a silly goose good time. So yeah. I get to sit there and watch, you know, cars that I can nerd out about, you know, doing things that are crazy. Christina lets me do it and leaves me alone. So it's great.
Tim, can I tell you something nuts? This next Please. Coming week, I have to book my first flights to a race, like in the future, like for 2023. Obviously, it's not next week that I'm going to a race, but I have to start planning travel next week.
Hey,
how exciting is that, Tim?
And to all of you out there, you travel warriors, you road dogs, you people that travel a whole bunch, my hat is off to you. I had to travel last week. I am broken. I'm tired. It was a huge toll. So hats off to you. No idea how you do it. People in the airport are terrible. Like they are the worst.
They're so bad. It's incredible. I love it.
There was in Charlotte, North Carolina, there was an American Airlines clerk booth, or like a customer service kiosk around, I don't know, gate C20 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there was a woman drunk on Thursday night at midnight, just railing these poor kids. And she's sitting there, do you know who I am? Blah, 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 blah. I this is a shout out to American Airlines. Whoever those kids were took it like champs. Oh. They took it and they were respectful. They did not break their faces. They did not break character. They did not break professionalism. I went up to them afterward and shook all their hands and said, hey, way to go. Like, I would have told that lady to get lost. And you guys kept her cool, gave her solutions, even though she was calling you all kinds of names. So, yeah, my hat's off to you guys.
Tim, that was your first time flying in how long? Like, year, right?
Oh, God. When was the last time I flew? A couple years, yeah. I flew to Denver a couple years ago in, like, 2021.
Does flying to Denver really count, though?
Well, for me. That was the farthest west I'd ever been.
Every route takes you through, didn't it?
I went up to Wisconsin this time, and that's the farthest north I've ever been.
Oh my gosh, Tim, so. You have to come visit here in the summer, man. Come out for Superbike weekend.
Yeah, Christine and I are committed to doing more stuff and living our lives better in 2023. We have gotten our first concert tickets. I haven't been to a concert.
Oh,
since the last show I saw BB King do. Which was sad. So we're gonna go see the last tour of the Grateful Dead.
Ooh, look at you, the last tour for now. Come on out to Superbike weekend. It'll be fun.
Ah, Superbikes. You can keep your Superbike. I'll just come up there you'll teach me how to ski. It'll be fun.
But I mean, I can't do that. What?
The new F1 season will start.
That is true. That is
the only thing we have to talk about in the new F1 world is the pissing match between the FIA's MBS, who is going on Twitter and complaining about things in an F1 way, and then the F1 organization kind of lashing out and sending a very formal, very terse letter to the FIA to tell them to stop interfering and trying to govern. It does smack a bit that MBS is trying to overstep his bounds and alter the way F1 does business. First and foremost, he did take exception with the entry of Cadillac and the Andretti team. And they're all GM. I apologize.
Well, he's for it. The F1 teams are against it.
I know, but he is weighing in on their decision, meaning an external person is trying to be a decision maker and throw his weight behind something. Mm-hmm. And then he took to Twitter recently to say that the valuation, there was online speculation, or there was an article, I believe, in Bloomberg, where it was mentioned that the Saudi Arabian government, in their push to buy things like LIV Golf and several other prominent sports, that F1 had been on the table because they have a massive $700 trillion war chest that they're working with. $700 billion war chest. Then MBS said the $20 million valuation that Bloomberg had put out that Formula One felt it was worth was massively overinflated and probably has some shenanigans behind it. And F1 took real exception with that. Liberty Media agreed to buy the...
Go ahead.
No, you're fine.
I was gonna say, let's pause for a second real quick here, because I think it's important to mention that the FIA and Formula One have a very complex relationship.
Extremely.
And now, so for the FIA sanctions Formula One. Formula One is their property and they govern the body, right? However, there's also FOM, formerly called like Formula One Media, the Formula One Group. FOM is kind of just the shorthand, right? Formula One Management. Formula One Management is the part that is owned by, Formula One Management is responsible for the promotion of the FIA Formula One World Championship and their commercial rights. Okay. So FIA owns the name Formula One and they sanction it. They make the rules. Okay. FOM, the Formula One group is the group that says, okay, we're going to rate, we'll get this on TV, and this is how we sponsor it, and this is how we put it in front of people, Drive to Survive, and this and that. That is the part that can be bought. Okay, this is the FOM. That is the part that's owned by Liberty Media. Liberty Media can then sell that, blah, 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 and the FIA is just sitting there. FOM, the Liberty Media owns, I believe it's a 100-year stake as the management of the Formula One group,
that,
right?
That so was like one of the most cunning deals that Bernie Eccleston ever made.
Yes. Yeah, Bernie Eccleston wrote that, and then he sold his part to Liberty Media, by the way. That's why we bring up
for
Bernie, right?
$4 billion.
$4 billion, yeah. So,
and I don't think, given the, seismic shift in knowledge about Formula One and the popularity of Formula One growing so much, I don't think $20 billion is unheard of, given how quickly they've grown it.
I'm not entirely sure that's completely accurate.
The American market has woken up, and they have more recognition in the Middle East. I think absolutely.
I think okay. Like I would agree. However, I'm asking myself, and this is my devil's advocate coming out, how sustainable their growth is. Like theoretically, you're going to start to plateau at some point.
Yeah, but you have to look at it from a profitability standpoint. Growth and scaling is one thing if you're just talking about a widgets and gadgets manufacturing company. Growth is a completely different thing if it becomes a widely known, widely loved, passed on generation to generation type sport. I think that is you're talking about a completely different animal. And I think that you get the more eyeballs you get, the more fandom you get, the more consistent tuning in. Mm-hmm. That is a quantum shift in the value of your product. If for any reason American football took off and really caught on fire abroad, the valuations would be just massive. So
and that's true. That's true. I'm looking, now that you mention it, I think the NHL is worth about $35 billion or something like that. So that 20 does sound about right, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And that's a sport in the NHL. Canada likes it and Europe likes it.
Yeah.
So America, that's
yeah, fourth largest sport in North America.
I don't know if we talked about it recently, but I was just tickled to no end recently by a European hockey league news
which
item
one?
That popped up. Could you me and my old man ways, which one do you think?
I'm gonna guess. What is it? You go ahead.
That back in the 1990s, when I was a big fan of hockey, I was always, we had there's a kid in my class who his dad was played for the Blues, and when Wayne Gretzky came to town, that was great. But I was always a fan of another team as well, because they had this great player named Mario Lemieux.
You know exactly who I'm going to talk about.
Bulldog in those times was one Jaromír Jágr from the Czech Republic, who this year laced up his boots, laced up his skates, and went out and played a couple of shifts. I believe he scored.
Played 20 minutes. He scored, I believe.
I think he scored twice.
Yeah, he's 50, by the way, which should be mentioned too, that when he retired, I believe he was 45. Yeah, so yeah, he was about 45 when he retired, which is already just nuts.
If it's something as popular as that, where I know about a game that's going on in the Czech Republic, and all of a sudden, kids over here are talking about the British Grand Prix. Yeah, your product's gonna be worth a whole lot more. See how I brought it back right there? You thought I was gonna let it go. I did. I brought it back.
Here's my Christmas gift for you. I'm gonna source one of my hockey jerseys, and I'm gonna source one of my hockey jerseys and see if I can't get you one of those Jaromir Jagr HC Kladno jerseys.
That'd be hilarious. I'll wear that for Halloween.
Anyways,
wonder.
So let me ask you this, because I think it is a talking point that has been hit on a few times, and it's something that the IndyCar fan in me just does not like seeing. I don't know if a full split is in the works, but the way the FIA and the FOM talk to each other, really to me reeks of a large disconnect that is very worrying. Now, when IndyCar had this in the past, that's what caused the car IRL split. Now, I don't know if F1 and the FOM are going to split, right? What that would look like would be the teams deciding. I know this sounds crazy, but I really can like 10% see all 10 of those teams going, no, here's what we'll do is we don't need you and your BS and you're adding teams and you're telling us what to do. We're going to just rebrand as Top Formula. All right. Formula A. Okay. And all 10 of us are going to put these exact same cars on the exact same tracks on slightly different dates. That doesn't sound secure. I know that's crazy. I can almost see teams threatening that. But I do think, though, that this kind of tension is going to be what will kill the momentum Formula One has. I think, can see that killing their momentum.
I think it depends how things are played. So they wouldn't just do a split like that. What I could see happening is the F1 teams and Liberty Media, because now the FIA has pissed off Liberty Media pretty good by lowering their stock price and their valuation of their sport that they have spent heavily to grow. And I think that in court, MBS would actually have a pretty big problem because that would be seen as tipping the scales. So my guess would be that if MBS does anything like this again, there will be a lawsuit. That lawsuit will result in an injunction against the FIA and will likely allow the Formula One teams to grant and build their own governing body. And then the FIA is cut out. Without Formula One, the FIA actually is pretty screwed.
It's a governing body and it's big in Europe. But if you go to tracks in the United States, Tim, yeah, most of those are, you know, not governed by the FIA. They're not like Gateway is not FIA checked.
No,
and they don't have IndyCar, to be IndyCar and
right. But they have their own governing body and their own, you know, internal mechanisms to make that work. And my guess would be that Formula One would probably turn to Roger Penske for some guidance as to how to silo and build a governing body that would be effective for Formula One and Formula One only. And then make it scalable to where they would govern everything. So if Liberty Media is shrewd in this moment, they could actually come out on top, because MBS is not in the strongest position. And I think he's overplayed his hand a bit here and caused himself some legal issues, because he is stepping in and talking about valuations of entire sections of something that his business benefits from. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that any impartial governing body or judging body would be able to say he didn't.
Let me correct that. IndyCar is technically under the FIA. IndyCar is kind of their own thing. Like IndyCar is under ACUS, which is under the FIA, but in the same way that NASCAR and the NHRA are under the FIA. Are under the FIA. I'll tell you right now that as someone who works very closely with the NHRA, the NHRA is the governing body. They don't really give a single shit about the FIA. NASCAR, I don't think any of the ovals are FIA certified, and they certainly don't have to be FIA certified to race on a NASCAR race and like a road course. I don't think they have to do the actual FIA certification. They just have to have a NASCAR certification. Right. You're right though. They are not super valuable elsewhere. And like I said, that is what the split was, right? Is the teams go to Roger Penske or whoever and say, let's form our own governing body and we'll have all the teams.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Some of the tracks, right? And then the FIA, who by the way, still owns the right to quote Formula One as like a name and brand, goes like, because that new series, that hypothetical, they would be like, let's call them the World Motorsports Championship. They'll rename themselves to the WMC. The FIA in that situation would go, well, we have Formula 2, Formula 3 that's still under us. What's to stop us from changing the Formula 1 rules, getting a few new teams and manufacturers? Oh, what's that, Ford? Oh, what's that, Toyota? You guys want to join now that it's way cheaper? Honda? And going, okay, well, we also own the rights to the Monaco Grand Prix. We also own the rights to this British Grand Prix in Silverstone. And in fact, all the history is with us. So you have the history, the dates, and the famous tracks up against new tracks and technically new GPs, but the same teams that you have. And that's what killed IndyCar. That's what very nearly murdered that sport.
Very nearly. But I think that there's too much broad awareness now of Formula One. I mean, I went to an orientation for work last week in Wisconsin. Half the crowd had heard of Formula One and were actively invested in one driver or another. Luke hasn't announced this, but I am wearing as a gift from my parents, Red Bull jacket.
That's why you get away with it.
Per Checo Perez. But I will say that people are hardcore about Max Verstappen. They're hardcore about Lewis Hamilton. These are household names now. I think that this is a much stronger hand than was going in with IndyCar and the FIA.
Andretti was a household name. Unser was a household name.
Not to this scale. It was in our small circles, but this is broad. To the point where there is a major corporation that uses F1 color schemes to do our power rankings. Yeah. We're judged on F1 color scales. I'm just saying. It's functionally different. And I think that FIA is on such a heat on their heels so much and on such a back foot
when
that it's going to be a knockout.
You have to. Now, granted, the F1 in the 90s was not quite the same. I would say that if that happens, that's a disaster. That is an absolute disaster for Formula One as a sport. You have to remember though that at the time IndyCar was as big as the at the time Formula One. Like at the time F1 and IndyCar were duking it out, honestly, international. IndyCar was international. They would race in Australia, they would race in Brazil, South America, they would actually race sometimes in Europe. And that is the reason, that split is the reason why we don't have international races to this day outside of the race in Toronto, because they have never financially recovered. I don't see how. I'm not entirely sure how that would end up profitable for either venture, because Tim, I do not trust the teams of Formula One to either run a series that would maintain themselves profitable, which is their number one goal, but then would end up being watchable.
I think that there are some very smart people.
I think it very nearly kills both.
I think F1 comes out on top.
F1 is in the FIA or F1 is in
the teams and the management.
Okay. All right. I mean,
I think it'll work,
but can you see that happen?
Oh, I can absolutely see it becoming the same thing. Absolutely. 150%.
Okay.
But I don't see, because we've been talking about killing the Monaco Grand Prix for so long that honestly, if you took 2 or 3 years off the calendar, you had slightly different dates and you still kept with Drive to Survive, F1 TV Pro, and you still kept like your growing numbers. I could see something good happening. So, right, you eventually have the FIA buckle. They give the rights back and you call it your triumphant return to Monaco. It's going to be, it's just a weakened hand.
Let me explain all the things that would probably lose, the teams would lose in this hypothetical, just for the listener's sake right here, because I think this is a fun thought experiment, especially in the off season.
I agree.
So you would keep the race in Bahrain. You'd probably keep the race in Saudi Arabia. The race in Australia, I don't think would happen. It's a temporary, these temporary street circuits, you're asking them to do it twice now, and they're contra. And I think that they would lose Australia. I think they would lose Monaco. They would almost definitely lose Canada. Great Britain would be very tough. Silverstone is a very busy circuit, and the British GP, what they would race there is not the British GP. They'd race, they wouldn't even call it a GP. They would call it the British Championship presented by crypto.com or some bull hockey, right? Like yeah. That's what it would be called, because they can't call it a Grand Prix. They also can't use any highlights of previous races. So you can't race at Abu Dhabi and then show Max winning in 2021 and 2022. You would probably lose Spa-Francorchamps. In fact, that might bankrupt that track, to be honest with you.
It also all comes down to how it's played in court.
This is totally true. But you have to think, though, with like, Vegas would be a tough one. I don't think they keep Vegas in that case.
I don't know.
You would not shut down Vegas for 2 days.
I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I think we can leave the ladies and gentlemen with this, that it is a nuanced argument. It's an interesting power play. You should all keep an eye on this space, because this is as peak Formula One as Max and Lewis going down in the first corner as hot as possible. This is the same thing. It's jockeying for position. It's lovely. I love it.
It really is what it is. Did you see the one, what was it? Somebody called out, I think it was a court or somebody called out MBS for singling out Lewis. And hold on. I saw a headline somewhere that was like, hey, the FIA is singling out Lewis Hamilton.
They're saying that you have to get approval for political speech.
Right. But I was saying, what I'm trying to get is that, like, we said that a while ago, where we're like, yeah, okay, no bling and no political statements, huh?
Especially now that
Seb Vettel is retired.
Yeah, likes to wear his jewelry and express himself, and he also likes to share his political opinions.
I'm sure which if you one is that some kind of is ban it the, on like fashion, on yeah. like, you know, wearing high fashion to the grid, I'm sure that would apply to everyone too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. You know, and I mean, you know, as long as we're at it, let's just, you know, outlaw black people.
Yeah, I was about to say the next rule honestly, is so you can't be black and drive Formula One. Exactly. But it applies to everyone equally. Everyone equally.
Such horseshit. It is such horseshit. I just find it such a slap in the face, and it's absolutely targeted at Lewis. And Lewis, I still feel, is the GOAT. And you should back off. The GOAT can do whatever he wants to do. And it's honestly, it's because it's not like a really boring white guy that they're going after him like this. He's an opinionated and passionate black man. It's bullshit.
Hot take. If the FIA wasn't targeting Lewis in some form, I don't think not like targeting, but if the FIA respected Lewis in the same way that it respects most drivers on the grid, I don't think 2021 Abu Dhabi even happens.
I completely agree. I think that was driven in part due to race, and I think it's fucking disgusting.
I don't even know about race. I think race probably plays into the dislike, sure, but I also think that the FIA and FOM at that point both just kind of, and this is so conspiracy, I hate sounding conspiracy, but I think that everyone
in the governing body kind of
realized that they would make a lot more money on a Max championship, and they saw an opportunity.
I also think there was an ulterior motive to not allow Michael Schumacher's record to be broken.
I would say that was in the back of their mind.
Max was in an inferior position. And Max is also just an inferior human being. He apparently in his private jet has installed a new racing simulator so he can fly around the world and do his data. And then he will not be sharing any test data with Daniel Ricciardo, their reserve driver, because he prefers to do it himself, he says. He is the most petulant.
That is such
bullshit. He is, honest to God, he is, he's what's his face? He's Jamie Lannister. That's what he
is. Oh my gosh, he really is.
He's
he says the guy in the Red Bull racing jacket.
Checo Perez, that's, baby. Checo.
I was going to say, that's officially...
I'm old now.
Officially a Checo Perez jacket.
It's a Checo Perez jacket. Honestly, Audi. Man, that is actually it. Audi completed their purchase of Sauber. We talked about all the shenanigans with the managers switching, and that isn't even done yet. So Fred Vasseur is out there. They're being accused of adding 30 brake horsepower to their engine. Fred Vasseur is quickly out to put that out. So his first action as Ferrari head is going to be to go out and put out a rumor and then announce that they are trying to sign Leclerc to a long-term deal because they are afraid that if they don't provide a world championship winning car, they will lose him.
All right, Tim, to end the episode here, okay? Yes. What are the odds that Ferrari does not blow it this year?
Zero. They are going to blow it.
And that is your first take of 2023.
That is the only take. And you know what? But here's one more. I'll be cheering for them when they do it. And on that bombshell, it is time to end. Thank you guys very much for listening. I have been Tim. He has been Luke. And we hope you guys have a good one. We promise we will get back on a regular schedule soon. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes. Peace.
See you.